This is Frank Hymans recording an oral history interview with Boris Scutt and Nick Pastor. And today is the 4th of October 2005. This interview is being conducted at flats 632, number 58, Belfer Street, Chippendale. And this is for the Millers Point Oral History Project. This is tape number MPFH29, side A. Okay, having done all that, Nick and Boris, I'll ask questions individually to each of you if you like, but if anybody wants to answer any question that I haven't addressed specifically, please do so. Just feel free to jut in. So first I'll get some information about you, Boris, if it's okay. Boris, can you tell me your full name and where and when you were born?
Boris Scutt. I was born in Klagenfurt, Austria, 1945.
How did you manage to be born in Klagenfurt, Austria?
Fairly long story. My mother lost a father. She was in Russia at the time. And they tried to escape, to get away from the communists, as far as I can gather. And after she lost her father, she got told about it, or she never saw him again, she linked up to my grandparents, or my father's grandparents, actually. And how we got to Austria, I don't know, but I sort of remember a train trip. Now, I don't know whether that was in Austria No, I'm sorry.
Do you want to start
again? That was in Australia.
The train trip?
Yeah.
Oh, okay. Who was your father, Boris? Do you know anything about your father?
No, he never saw me.
And why is that?
Well, apparently he was... again, I'm not too sure where it was. It was in Russia, I believe, that... He become a missing person. So he never saw me.
And how did he become a missing person? What do you know about that?
Well, he's a soldier. He was fighting against the the Germans at that stage, yeah.
So his nationality was also Russian, wasn't
it? Oh, he was Russian, yeah, but that's about as far as I can tell you about him. And again, there's only one photograph of him that ever survived, and that was in his Russian uniform.
Do you have that photograph?
No. I think my sister might have it.
Right, okay.
That'd be right?
No, I don't think so.
Yeah, it was only a shot of him from midriff up, and, you know, he's dressed in his soldier uniform. That's the only surviving one photograph that I...
Do you know where he was killed, in which battle or something?
No way. No, you know, I mean, but I believe at that stage he was in Moscow, but then again, you know, I'm not too sure.
So you were born in 1945?
Yep.
And so your father, it must have been near the end of the war then, that that you were conceived, wasn't it?
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
Right. Okay, interesting. So you got to Austria, and what was it, a displaced person camp, was it?
Yeah, it was a camp in Klagenfurt. I remember it was very, pretty cold because I was always rugged up, and there was ice, and I remember sort of skating there with my uncle, or him sort of teaching me how to skate, or me falling over, and plenty of snow. Yep.
So you were in a displaced persons camp at the age of about what? From when to when? When did you get to the camp? Which year?
Oh, I've no idea. No idea at all.
But if you have a memory, it must have been at least three or four.
Yeah. Right? Oh, yeah. Yeah, it would have been three or four, yeah. Yeah.
So before you actually got to the camp, you knew where your mum... Did your mum ever tell you what happened? I mean, where she was?
No. never ever. Like I say, we were in these huts with my father's grandparents and mum and my uncle, Michael.
Right, okay. What happened to your mother's father? You said he was missing.
My mother's?
Was it your mother's father that you said was missing?
Yeah, can I...
go ahead.
He and her brother were working on a wharf at Yalta, and the Germans bombed the area, and they were in the ship at the time, and they went down with the ship in a German bombing raid. Both of them died there. They didn't come back.
I don't think they knew about that until after the war, wasn't it? Or when Mum rode away, the Red Cross or wherever?
No, that was one of the reasons. They were gone.
Okay.
Their sister got married and moved to Moscow.
Yeah.
She was by herself, so he said, I'm going. I'm going to get out of here. So she went west by herself at, 16 or 17 or 18?
Is that your mother's sister?
My mother.
Our mother. Your mother.
Her sister got married and moved to Moscow and left.
And what happened to her? The sister?
Her sister... We found out 43 years later, via the Red Cross, that a week after she came down from Moscow to see my mum had left. So they missed within a week or days of each other, and caught up with each other in 91, via the Red Cross. Mm. 47 years later.
I think we had a photograph of Mum and her sister, didn't we? Somewhere again, I think Anna might have that.
Right. That's an interesting story, isn't it? They met in Australia or where?
Via telephone.
So your auntie, your mother's sister, was still in Russia, was she?
Yes. Mm. Yeah, she stayed with her husband and family there.
And your mother was in Australia?
She took off.
Yeah, like I said, with our grandparents.
Wherever. And met up with...
my father's grandparents.
All right.
Is that right?
Yeah. And then she met your dad and her family and on the trip. And continued west. Trying to get out of the war, basically, out of the fighting.
Yeah, but my father was dead at that stage, wasn't he? Or he was missing. Was he in Austria?
I don't think he made it to Austria. I think he was still somewhere in Russia.
Russia, yeah.
Fighting exactly. And got caught and...
Yeah, like he's a missing person. It was never confirmed whether he's alive or dead or whatever. He's just one of the...
Yeah.
Yeah.
Pretty sad, isn't it?
It's a tragic tale, yes.
Isn't it, about how war can divide families and
just split everything up and they... Yes. Yes.
Right, okay. Now, Boris, you've got some memories in the camp. You mentioned skating or ice skating.
Oh, yeah.
What else do you remember?
Uncle Michael, he sort of looked after me a bit there and, he sort of... I followed him around and, we went skating or I remember falling over a few times and crying a lot and things and, it was all sort of a fairyland setting actually because it was surrounded by mountains. I think the Alps were on the other side. I'm not too sure of Klagenfurt. I'm sure the Italian Alps were over the other side. So it was a pretty nice place except for the camp itself. Which is, the usual thing you'd expect in 1945 in that era.
Right, sure. Were you made to feel a bit like prisoners there?
Never me, because I had the run of the place and that age, I just sort of roamed around and no one I can't remember if there was guards there. I think there might have been some sort of security. But I can also remember going to the movies with Uncle Michael.
What, at the camp?
No, at the camp. I don't think there was any sort of... the only thing they provided at the camp itself was food. And that's about it. But I do remember going somewhere with the movies. And I'm pretty sure that the movie I watched was Snow White and the Seven Dwarfs.
Right, okay. Interesting.
It sticks in my memory for some reason that, you know, because of the Wicked Witch in it.
Right. Just move over closer to Nick and Boris and get the microphone on both of you. Okay. So you were in this camp and your family wanted to get out, and so what moves did they make to leave?
My mother originally wanted to go to America, and her second choice was Canada. Because she was a single mother, America was out, and so was Canada. And again, my father's parents wanted to come to Australia. I've no idea why. Whether their son, Uncle Michael, maybe that was one of the reasons again that they, you know, just didn't want a family as such to go over there. Anyway, my mother naturally said, "Well, we'll go. She'll stick with them and come to Australia." But she's only very young. I think she was 19. She would have been a little bit older by then, maybe 20.
Hmm.
Oh, 21, 20. Hmm. You know, she was still very young.
Right, sure. So did it take very long to get permission to get to Australia?
I've no idea. I've no idea. I know that we, from the camp, we end up going through wherever, you know, whether that was a train trip again, you know, that always in my memory that we're in these sort of cattle trucks, not like what you see on the Holocaust or that though, but I mean, not far off it either, because there was, you know, that was just bedding and remember those big doors used to be open because a lot of people were smoking again, I don't know whether it was over there or over here.
Well, you were very young,
So I do remember the train trips.
How old were you when you actually arrived in Australia?
That was in 49, right at the end of 49. So that would have made me 4 or 5, whatever.
Do you remember anything about the ship journey to Australia?
Oh, yeah. It was a converted warship, battleship, I'm not too sure, you know, but, again, I had a good time. My mother was seasick most of the way, so, you know, I sort of just run around a free spirit, more or less, you know, and had the run of the place. I had my grandparents there and my uncle. Again, he was sort of, you know, I tagged along with him, and, it was a good adventure. I sort of had fond memories of that trip, very fond memories, and especially when we got to Naples. It was first taste of real food, or fruit, and rock melons. I always remember that. You know, I ate so many rock melons and grapes, and it was...
All the things you hadn't had before?
Oh, never, ever. Like at the camps, they used to... One of the things I remember that they'd give you these apples, and they'd either be very green or very pretty rotten. And my grandparents used to heat them up on the little stoves that we had for warmth and for warming up food as well. So, you know, I mean, and it was a big step up.
Right. And so you took the ship from Naples to Australia, did you?
Naples, Colombo? Hmm. Yeah, Colombo. Yeah, we stopped off there. But, Naples always was pretty good, except when they made me go to school there. It was a Catholic school. I remember that too, getting hit with a cane because I couldn't speak. I could understand a little bit of Italian, but the nuns were pretty strict, and you know I couldn't believe it.
Yeah, they were pretty strict in Australia in those days as well.
Oh yeah, well yeah, but in Naples, Italy, whatever, they were yeah.
How long did you stay in Naples? Do you think?
It was quite some time. I've no idea. I think I've got a little photograph of how long it could roughly tell you. It would have been a week, maybe more.
So not very long, actually.
Oh, well, yeah, it was a long time for me. It's maybe not so long.
Right. And do you remember the name of the ship you came on?
No idea.
No.
Again, I've got the, I think the photograph. It might have the name of the ship on that.
Right. Yeah. Was it an Italian ship?
From memory, it was staffed by, which another thing, it was the first, and I ran a mile. They had little bubblers, or big bubblers, I suppose, at that stage, and I was trying to have a drink off this bubbler, and this person came up behind me and lifted me up so as I could have a drink, and it was a black person, and I run 100 miles away because, you know, I'd never seen a black person before in my life, and I just boom, you know, just ran. But eventually after I got the initial thing, they were pretty good. I don't think they were Negro. I think they were South African people. So I think it might have been a Pommy ship.
Okay, all right. Great. Well, when you find the name of the ship, maybe we can make a note later.
Yeah. Mm.
So what do you remember about arriving in Sydney?
Well, I can't remember arriving in Sydney. You know, I mean, I just sort of, like, again, you know, we just travelled. And when we got here, I think we were in another camp with those, the half-rounded semi corrugated iron things.
The Nissen huts. They were called Nissen huts.
Were they? Yeah, whatever. And we were there for, again, I couldn't tell you for how long. And my mother ended up getting a job at Ashfield, I think it was. It was a... This is another... I've only just thought of it, actually. And she was there as a handy cook or whatever, you know, she's an odd job lady, girl. And eventually, this is after Mum left there, of course, that the woman that was there, and I sort of half remembered her now, she was arrested because there was old people and... when they died, instead of giving them a burial, she buried them out the back somewhere. Mum said, look at that lady. I knew she was a bad woman, I knew that. That was another thing that, you know, that happened.
Right, and how was your mother's English?
Very poor. Was never ever acceptable towards the finish, but no.
But she picked it up, of course, did she? Did she pick up enough English to get back?
Oh, yes. So I mean, she could read and write, but it was pretty... very pedestrian.
Now, this migrant camp that you went to when you first arrived, do you remember where it was?
Bathurst.
Was it Bathurst? Yeah, I have no idea.
Bathurst.
Bathurst,
yeah.
Huh? Yeah. Cold place in winter.
I never felt any discomfort in any of those places because being young, I got the best of everything. You know, I never...
They looked after you.
Yeah, exactly. You know, and by this stage, Mum had met a few other people from the ship, the ship, and Ukrainians, and mainly Ukrainians, I think, weren't they? And a few Russian people there as well, but they become... surrogate
uncles. Extended family.
Independent. And lifelong friendship with Mum anyway, weren't they? And us. Yeah, they become like our aunties and uncles in Wu.
They're all in the same boat together, so they're stuck to each other.
You've got to remember, we're there for a hell of a long time from memory. Like, you know, and you just wink up and...
Now, how did your mother meet the next man that she married? In other words, Nick's father.
On board romance. And it just went from there, basically.
She had a few suitors.
Mobile. There's a mobile on somewhere. She had a few suitors when she came.
She had a couple of admirers, two that I know of, but I can't remember. Peter, but the other Peter Block, he was, and he'd become a lifelong friend as well. Like I say, she's a pretty attractive woman. So
she remarried your father, Nick, is it Peter, is it?
Yes.
That's his name. So she met him in the camp, did she? Was he also on the trip over. On the trip over.
Yeah.
She stayed in touch with him and they married. Which year was it that they married?
A long while later, about 63, 62 they got married officially. Mm. Up until then they lived with each other.
All right. Now, Nick, tell me a bit about you, when you were born and how that all happened. Obviously... It must have happened because Peter's your father. You were born in which year?
1951, in May 1951, at the Royal Prince Alfred Hospital.
Right. So this is when your mother was working in Ashfield, wasn't it?
No. This is well after.
Okay.
I can't tell you the time frame, but Ashfield was a small part of it. And then Peter... Nick's father got involved there, and from there we moved. I can remember Moore Park. I can remember a few places, and then Millers Point.
So, which year was it that you all moved to Millers Point?
I think it was 1951, was it? 1950, 1951.
Yeah, I think I started school in 52, didn't I? At Ford Street.
Or 53.
53. So it was in that time.
We were definitely there in 51 because there's photographs in that.
What, in 51?
Yeah, 52, yeah.
So, Nick, when you were born, you think the family lived already in Millers Point?
Yes. Oh, yeah.
Yes.
51.
At Agar Steps. Agar Steps,
yeah.
Millers Point. Yeah.
7 Agar Steps.
Yep.
Now, can you describe that house for me, either of you?
Not a house. I mean, the dwelling itself is that one up there. okay, that's, you know, and we had that. It was a room with a kitchen, the original. And it was at the back of that place. It was overlooking a big, terrifically big backyard.
So originally a two-room flat.
It was
and
a
later
room
on, a few years later, they extended to a four-room flat.
Yeah, they drilled a hole through the wall, and we end up having that part as well.
Right.
So it was a two-bedroom kitchenette, two kitchens more or less.
And which level of the house did you occupy?
It was the first floor. We were in the first floor.
Did you have the whole first floor?
No.
Because there was...
It was a boarding house.
Just a half of the first floor.
Yeah, and then the other half was, you know,
another two
stairs coming up, and you know, it's quite a big. Well, if you ever go down that way, you'll see it's a fairly big premises, a very big premises.
It had good views of the north and the west, and it also had good views of the south, overlooking a great backyard.
Mm.
Why was the backyard so large?
No idea. It was just...
It came with the land there.
Yeah, it was chickens, there were and bloody dogs.
Cats and...
Cats.
Cockatoo that swore.
The cockatoo, that was... I believe someone once said it was 100 years old. And it mimicked... It could mimic... Nick, my mother, me, and you'd hear that, and it'd be just like Mum calling, or Nick, or you know, I mean, it was a very good. I learned a few tricks, and it used to attack me quite a lot. It was a fairly large. Was it a cockatoo?
A sulphur crested white cockatoo.
Yeah. It was a big. You know, that and stage, I was a little bit closer to the ground.
And when it swore, the landlady, Mrs. White, used to come out with a bucket of water and throw a bucket of water over it.
Yeah.
And it swore really well.
Yeah. It
and loud.
The premises was, again, there was a lot of jungle and, you know, it was good again for me as a youngster, like, you know, and, it wasn't too bad.
Do you know how big the backyard was in size?
Most like a quarter of an acre, yeah. A good...
Yeah. So I think they've got now...
Quarter of an acre.
Yeah.
So what grew in it? Like,
mostly weeds.
Everything. Weed.
Morning glory.
Forget-me-nots.
The...
Brambles. No brambles at the back, right at the back. Someone else's place?
Blackberry.
Yeah, it could have been.
Blackberry vines and prickly pear and ginger, the ginger plant. Most of the weeds,
So good assortment of weeds, no trees.
But there were...
Oh, no, there was something.
Banana trees. Morning glory.
The front part of it was... looked after a little bit better than the back part. They just give up on that because maybe it wasn't even their land. Maybe it was, you know, the people's on the sandstone side of it. But there was no fences, so, you know, we just sprang through it. And, it was good to play in. It was,
I'll just make an announcement. This is the end of tape number NPFH29, side A. This is the start of tape number MP29, side B. Sounds like it was a pretty interesting house. Take me for an imaginary walk through the house, like, you know, from the front door, how you got to your place. Just tell me what was there.
Straight into the kitchen. There was a stove was at the table. There was a window, naturally, and the table was in front of that. The ice box was on that side. Then the stove was over there than the...
And you had to put the pennies in to get it going.
And the kitchen, the sink was beside that as well. It was on that far. And there was a window there because you could look out and see Darling Harbour now, and you could see the P&O boats. You know, it's quite scenic. Whenever they came in, we all knew what they were and what they weren't. And yep. And then straight into the bedroom. My bed was on that side. If you were facing
south,
and then the double bed, mum and dad, and that was it.
Did you have a separate room for you kids?
No,
we all slept in the same room.
It was one room. It would have. At that stage, this is originally, and it was nowhere near as big as this. I assure you of that. Like it was my double bunk there, my bunk, little bed, and the double bed was over that way, and then there was just, that was it. You just walked into it. There's nothing else.
Right.
And then they extended.
Yeah, well, that's eventually when you come along, they put a hole through the thing.
Now, Boris, as a sort of refugee child, how are you treated by the Australian, so to speak, the other kids?
First day at school wasn't all that good. Because I couldn't speak English or, you know, and he knew a few words. And, I got a little bit... even the teachers were a little bit prejudiced, you know. My first teacher, Mrs. Bousfield, she scared me. And because I couldn't communicate, and yet, like I say, I could get by with a bit of German, Russian naturally, and even understood a little bit of Italian, but English wasn't, you know, because at home, and he spoke Russian. Yeah, it took me a little while, took me a few knocks, but I think it hardened me up a hell of a lot. I copped a few buildings and... gee whiz, they worry about bullying today. Gee whiz, in them days, I every day I used to get pushed, shoved, kicked, punched.
But in the end, you end up beating most of the bullies up, so no one touched
you. Yeah, that came in the course of time, but if it hadn't been for Mum picking me up at 3 o'clock, she had to be there nearly every day to pick me up, to walk me, which is only just about
100
odd metres to get me home. You know.
So what was Fort Street Primary School like for you, Boris?
Oh, originally it was a bit tough, but gradually, as my English improved and... the last few years there were more comfortable. Yeah, I suppose that every kid goes through it, you know, but I think that I had just a little bit more trouble because of the language problem and custom problems as well.
Interesting, yeah. What about you, Nick? I mean, you went to also to Fort Street, did you?
Yeah, Fort Street Primary, yeah, certainly did.
Did you have the dreaded Mrs. Bousfield as
no,
well?
No, I missed her. She might have... passed on by the time I was there. Now, I had a very nice teacher, Mrs. McNeihard as a kindergarten teacher, and yeah, she was very nice and very a lovely looking lady, and everyone liked her. And and I didn't go through what Boris went through. I think he paved the way for me. Most of the bullies left me alone, otherwise he would have got them. So I had a clear run. And I had a great time at Fort Street. I enjoyed it. I've still got friends from kindergarten and in the years that I've been there, going through there.
Yeah, well, so have I, because we're still keeping contact, the old Moore's Point, from the...
And Nick, can you give me an idea of what it was like growing up in Miller's Point for a kid of your age, say, you know, from the time you can remember?
Yeah, one big adventure. Either playing at Observatory Hill or climbing into the tennis court or playing in a little park next to the tennis court or going to the fire station or going to the King George, playing over the Harbour Bridge. Eventually, or riding our bicycles over the Harbour Bridge, playing in the railway, in the trains, subways, or the abandoned walking down the abandoned tram tracks, tram tunnels, fishing off the wharf, swimming off the wharfs. What else? Going to the city of the movies. We had it all. We had one good adventure. And happy memories and safe. No one got hurt.
and Boris, what about you? What do you sort of remember about those things in your childhood?
Yeah, it was pretty exciting. The bridge was part of my life. So I walked over it. I walked over the arc. This is when you get right to the top, there was no things hanging off you. You hung on because the bloody wind was so strong and you actually swayed. I've been underneath it and on the far side of the pylon, which was a graded, very foolhardy actually. That opposite the pylon, the other pylon, and one school holiday, whatever, we're underneath with the planks where the painters used to paint all the whatever they did, the nuts and bolts. And this is just under where the trains and the trams used to run. The trams used to run there as well. And we found this little passageway, and it was into the pylon itself, the far end, and every second railing was missing. So we got one of the painter's ropes and tied it around it. There's about five, six, I forget how many. And one of the blokes had the little lamp that you had on the bike. I might have even had a bike down there as well, because we all didn't have bikes in that day. And he stuck it on there in his belt, and we climbed, and there was a sheer drop every second, that this these stairs were removed. There'd be one flight of stairs, the next one would be missing. One flight of stairs and be missing. And when that flight of stairs, we sort of had the railing, and the ledge on where the stairs were, those were steel stairs. And what do you call that, Nick? Those steel stairs, they're still down there. They're about that thick across, and they used to rivet them in. But stop people from going up there, they took every second alternate level. So there was a drop that... And there we were climbing up there. And when we got up to the top, they had the records of the bridge and the photographs and of a building and the documentation, and it was all handwritten. And, that fluid...
Running writing.
Eh?
Running writing.
Whatever.
Was that the southern pylon?
Yeah, the opposite.
The one pylon. Opposite the southern pylon.
Yeah.
The one on the other...
Yeah, on that side, on the Luna Park side.
Oh, Luna Park the north side.
Yeah, well, whatever.
The north side pylon.
Yeah. There's the pylon that people go up.
The southern east one.
Right opposite the other one.
Okay, that's the southern west looks, facing.
Yeah, not over that way.
No, not on the north side, the southern side, yeah. Yeah, because that was never open for public.
The rats, I don't know how they lived there, but they were humongous. We know they eat each other. That's the only way they could have survived. But it's a pity I never thought of ever taking some of those photos. You know, that would have been very interesting. But the records, and they were all leather bound, and we looked around, after the rats sort of went straight back down again. But that was a pretty risky thing because no one's been up there, and that one falls, we all fall because we're all tied together with a rope, very stupidly. But yeah, that was one sort of a.
No insurance policy.
Oh, no. No way.
Now tell me, you saw something happen off that bridge, didn't you? Some dramatic event. What was it? When a man jumped off it or something?
Oh, well, I never saw it. But he was living in a. Right up the top of where we were, there was a sort of just a one room. And he is a nice boy, but originally there was a murder there.
This is in your house at Seven Agar
Steps.
You've got to remember that there was, I don't know how many people were living there. You know, we all had our own little bing bang, and you'd say hello, goodbye, or you didn't, or whatever, you know. But,
tell me about the murder first.
Yeah, apparently this man, he invited back a man and a woman, you know, after drinking at the hotel, and they bought a few beers with them. And as far as I know, I don't know whether it was a robbery or just a fight over the woman or whatever. Anyway, they killed him, the woman and the man, they hammered him. They had a hammer or got hold of a hammer, and they, again, I'm not too sure whether it was a robbery or just drunkenness or whatever. And anyway, this man and the woman, they caught up with him. Not that day. It might have happened that night, you know, because of the noise. You could hear stuff there. I can't recall, but I can remember the police being there sort of, you know, and afterwards. And no, again, my mother of that wouldn't say much. And
how old were you then about that time?
Oh, I've no idea.
We still going to school?
7, 8, 9. I was going to school, yeah. Because then the boys had, was sometime later, and there was a radio show called Police Files, and was on that, and you know, and all the, it was you know, and they all said, oh, that you got a murder up there, and you know, it was all big news. So we're still about 8, 9, 10, if that.
Do you remember the man's name who was killed?
No idea.
So that happened upstairs in the attic room.
Yep.
And then something else happened there later?
Yeah, he jumped off the bridge.
Oh, one of the residents, yeah.
He's a nice bloke too. Like I remember him. I can remember him because he had a Jeep that was always parked down the front of the stairs.
Left-hand drive as well.
Left-hand, American Jeep, yeah.
Plane.
And we'd play there, you know, and jump out of it and pretend whatever we would, whatever it was.
What was his name? Do you know?
No.
I've forgotten.
I can remember him, but I, you know, again, I've no idea.
Tell me some of the names of the other co-tenants in that house, or who the people were that lived in different floors.
Oh, yeah, Mr. and Mrs. White, they were the landlord, landlady. You know
what? The Gatfields used to live above us.
Above us, yeah.
Gatfields. The coffees,
that was a sad family. That was very sad. The coffees, they were...
Charlie downstairs?
They were... The coffees were very sad.
Why? What happened to the coffees?
Oh, well, they were alcoholic. Fight and scream and throw things at each
other. They had a baby as well, and when they got on the grog, you know, and they, the poor old baby, you know. Again, in them days, you didn't do too much. You know, you sort of stayed around.
Mm.
And what we were new Australians, so you don't meddle into Australian stuff. And, you know, and it was pretty violent. She just had continually black, bloody eyes. And, it was a sober.
No, nice.
Wonderful. You know, the grog just...
Was that a problem around the Nellis Point? The men used to drink too much?
There was a lot of drinking. Yeah. But, I mean, that's the only incident that I know of. But,
Now, Nellis Point being a maritime precinct, a lot of seamen and so on, what was sort of... What atmosphere, what do you remember about that? Those sort of activities... And the support system for those, like the wharves and the wool stores and all that kind of thing.
Most of the people there worked either by going to being merchant seamen, you know, to become a deck boy, a cabin boy first up, then a deck boy and go up to AB and all that. A lot of them went on the wharves.
Stevedores?
Yeah. A few worked in the wool stores. Night watchmen, yeah. It was all revolved around that type of thing.
What support systems? I don't think they had any support. Yeah, no support. The pubs were their support system.
You'd go down
the hotels.
The call up. The seamen, the merchant seamen, they had what they call a call-up.
And they're all unionist.
Oh, strong unions. Oh, yeah.
Very labour-orientated.
Yeah. Well, labour, communist.
Communist-orientated, yeah.
I think at that stage it was more communist than labour.
Probably, yeah.
Or always the communists because they ruled... The wharves, you know, I mean, that was it.
Now, Boris, last time I was here, you were telling me about some of the activities around Miller's Point, like you told me about some of the coopers that made barrels and things that happened in Gas Lane. Tell me about that again, can you?
Right next door to the fire station, there was an old cooper's place, and they were, we'd sneak in there after... on weekends when they didn't work. And it was just a sort of a little hideaway that we had. And we came from Ford Street Girls High School, not Ford Street Primary. And, you know, get in the back way. They never used to lock it up anyway. You know, I mean, it was a dilapidated... I don't think I've ever seen a photograph of it. We should have taken one. Mm-hmm. Although we didn't have a camera, most probably.
Is this where they made the barrels for the beer?
Yeah.
And where was it exactly?
Do you know the fire station? Which
in
is
Kent
there
Street?
At the moment?
Kent
well,
Street?
It was right next door to that.
Right.
And a little, maybe that much, and then, you know, that was there because, and above the Cooper, you know, the barrel place, again, there was all jungle and all that at the back of Ford Street Girls High School.
Right. And what was going on in Gas Lane?
Gas Lane.
Yeah, it was more the metal type industries. Yeah. Nuts and bolts and what's the word for that? Sort of like engineering shops, I think.
Gas Lane, where was that?
Yeah.
Wasn't there kind of a cave there?
It was a big, it was always cold, it was always mouldy, it was always wet. That was one of the worst.
That was one of our friends' backyard, and how they built the houses on a, they've cut a massive sandstone block away and built these houses, and it was just a natural type of cave that went, well, who knows how far.
And they had these big boxes there as well that I don't even know what they ever put in them.
But we used to use cubby houses and all that.
But it was a
stuffing.
It was something like Playfair Street, if you've ever seen the places that are built along the wall. You know, the sun never shines there. It was because we were going to move into Playfair Street, and Mum, myself, we went up there and had a look at a couple of the places there, and they were so depressing. And they had wire across it, because up the top Playfair, whatever it was, people would throw rocks or throw stuff over, and so you had to have this meshing over your backyard, which would be half the size of this. You know, you put up a couple of shoots
for protection.
Only for protection. Mm. Yeah, but it was again a very depressing thing. And the sandstone there, and never see the sun. And Mum said, "No way, no way."
It was Isles's transport company.
Oh yeah, of course, Isles. Yeah, trucking company. Yeah, where the hotel is now. The
down Kent Street. And opposite tennis court, there was another engineering. Because we used to get the ball bearings to make our wheelbarrows race.
I used to play tennis against that green thing. We put a line across, you know, roughly. And,
big roller door. Big roller door,
and that was it. And on the weekends, you know, that was our tennis. We would play tennis against each other. And of course, we couldn't get into the
tennis court.
Tennis court, people be playing there.
Same tennis court that still exists, you mean?
Oh, yeah.
In Kent Street. Mm-hmm. You had quite a bit of a playground there, and lots of nooks and crannies and so on, isn't it?
Oh, yeah.
Now, tell me a bit about the ships when they used to come in to unload. There was quite a bit of activity, wasn't there? Did you play in those ships?
Yeah, I had a paper on there for a little while, and we'd get on a board there, and or I'd be helping someone. I'd either be helping someone with that. They always make you work 2 hours when you went aboard a ship, for obvious reasons, I suppose. Not that I ever was molested or anything else like that, but that was one of the reasons that they always said, 2 out, we can look after each other. And it was quite good to sort of, we had the run of the ship, no one ever worried about us. And
from our window we could see them coming in and out of the wharfs, and either unload, they're either cargo ships or they were passenger liners coming unloading people or winching off.
Yeah, materials. This was all done manually. It wasn't it wasn't the containers. It was all wharfies did the whole lot.
Right. I believe Boris or Nick, you raided the kitchens of the ships at
some stage. Oh, that was me. Yeah. Oh no, we used to do that. Yeah.
Get some extra food.
Yeah, because again, they had such cakes and stuff which we didn't get too often.
Chocolates,
Whatever it was, and we just bang, and also when the shipping lines came in, the cruise things, we'd get on board there and try and, as we teenage type things, because I always had pretty girls on there, and we go on there.
Tell me a bit about the shops in the area. Who owned what shops that you remember?
Yeah, down at the bottom of Agar Steps was, I remember Tommy and Josie
Yeah, that's about it. I can remember them. There was another bloke there before them.
I can't remember him. That was Mr. Wilson. He was a greengrocer, wasn't
he? No, he was a greengrocer, yeah. Jacko, wasn't it? Jacko. Yeah. This bloke used to park down High Street, you know, right facing from the steps on a Friday morning, and he'd have the vegetables, and everyone went to Jacko or
Mr. Wilson.
Was it Mr. Wilson?
Yeah, it was Wilson, yeah, definitely.
I thought his name was Jacko. Yeah, anyway,
fruit.
He had all the fruit things that he got from vegetables. Wherever, and
But Tommy and JC was just a general store
yeah.
Down in bottom of Agar Steps.
What about haircuts? Where did you get your haircut?
Oh, yeah. There was two. It was Rube Lewis on one side, and I think the other bloke was Bill. Yeah, out of the two of them, Bill was the haircut man, and Rube was whatever. I think he was a baccarat dealer. That was his go, and this was his sort of whatever, like, you know. And
was he a bit of a shady character, was he, Rube?
Sorry?
Was he a bit of a shady character?
No, he was smallish in size. He's baldy, and there's nothing there to suggest he was anything, but... he had all these cards in the window, and if you've ever played baccarat, if you've ever been to an illegal game, you know that they only play it for about one hand practically, and then they just shot them out, and a new pack comes in. And so that's the and sometimes when I was coming back from the movies, he'd be on the tram with us about half. No, he'd be going, that's right. We'd be coming in, and he'd be going, and just say, I don't know, half past 9, 10 o'clock, maybe a bit later. And he could have been a dealer. He had something to do with it for sure, because he had all these cards, you know, and they'd been used.
He had comics as well, didn't he?
Oh, yeah, he was... Yeah, you could either buy them or exchange them, and it used to be 2 for 1. Yeah, you give him 2 and you could take 1, or you whatever it was, 1 penny, 2 penny, whatever. Anyway, when he wasn't looking, I'd sort of bang and stick one underneath the other and say, yeah, Reba. He said, you got anything there? What do you mean? He pulled out this big gun. He said, what do you got there?
He had a gun?
Oh, yeah. It was huge. It was, you know, it wasn't like a Colt. This was a serious gun. Like, you know, it was a... Yeah, and he sort of... He must have had it under his... He always wore an apron, naturally. And he pulled it out and bang. And when I looked up, I said, oh, yeah, good too. You know, I mean, he's only jagging, but it scared me. I never did that for a while afterwards.
Okay, we'll just take a break because it's the end of the tape. This is the end of tape number MPFH 29, side B.